driving the last spike as seen from a distance. The telegram arrived on a Tuesday. Wei Alum heard about it the same way he heard about most things, secondhand from men who hadn't been there. A crew boss named Callahan rode down the line on a gray horse, shouting, and the Irish crews set down their ties and started talking in voices Wei couldn't quite follow. One word came through clearly enough. Done. The railroad was complete. Somewhere in Utah, at a place called Promontory, two lines of track had met. Leland Stanford had swung a silver hammer at a golden spike. The telegraph had clicked the news across the continent in seconds, and somewhere far away, in cities Wei had never seen, people were celebrating. Wei looked at the desert. He was 34 years old, and he had been building this railroad for 5 years. He had come over from Guangdong Province on a Pacific mail steamer carrying tools and a name written on a scrap of paper, a labor contractor in Sacramento who turned out to be dead when he arrived, replaced by someone with the same function and a different face. He had found work with the Central Pacific within the month. It was not difficult to find work. The railroad needed a great number of men willing to do things other men refused. He had laid track across the Sierra Nevada. He had worked through 3 winters when the snow came over the tunnel entrances and men died in the drifts and were found in spring, preserved by the cold, still holding their tools. He had lowered himself on ropes over granite cliff faces in wicker baskets to set black powder charges, then been hauled up fast before the rock blew. He had survived that, and the altitude, and the alkaline dust of the Nevada desert, and the summer heat that reached 115 degrees in the flats east of Reno. The Irish and the Germans were paid $35 a month. The Chinese were paid $26 and fed themselves. None of this was in the telegram. The telegram said, done. At the Reno depot, a single cannon fired. The echo rolled down the valley, and then the air went quiet again, and the work went on, because work does not stop for celebrations that did not include you. The Chinese crews had not been invited to Promontory. This was not a surprise. Wei walked to the water barrel at the edge of the camp and drank and looked at the river. The truckee ran south of the depot tracks, a narrow green line through the brown. The town of Reno was visible from where he stood. 3 blocks of raw lumber, a hotel, 3 saloons, a canvas post office. It had appeared in the last year the way things appeared when money and momentum were pointed in one direction, seemingly overnight, as if it had always been there. The question now was what came next. Most of the men he had worked beside for 5 years were heading back west. Sacramento, San Francisco, the agricultural valleys, whatever work a labor contractor could find. Some were going home to China, if home was still a thing they could get back to. He had a family name and a province, but not much else. He had not been back in 5 years, and the exclusion laws being discussed in Washington would make going back and returning again more difficult. He understood the shape of things. He stood at the water barrel for a while and looked at the river. There was something in the light here he hadn't found in Sacramento or in the mountain camps. In the evening, when the heat broke and the cold air came off the Sierra, the light went flat and gold and turned the sage and the dust and the raw wooden buildings the same color. It was not a pretty light exactly. It was something more honest than pretty. He had noticed it in the weeks they'd worked through this valley and had not been able to say what it meant. He went back to the camp and told Callahan he was leaving for Reno in the morning. Going back to Sacramento? Callahan said. No. What's in Reno? Wei thought about it. A river, he said. Callahan looked at him for a moment and then wrote something in his ledger and moved on, which was the most you could ask of any of them. He came into town the next morning with his tools and the amount of money he had saved, which was not small. He found the Chinese quarter near the depot. 2 narrow blocks of men who had made the same calculation and arrived at the same address. He knew some of them. He rented a room. He spent 2 weeks looking for work and not finding it, and then a week looking for something else. What the town needed, he could see within 3 days, was laundry. Men poured through on their way to the Comstock mines and back again, all of them in a hurry, all of them smelling of the road, none of them inclined to wash their own clothes when someone else would do it for 20 cents a shirt. He rented a corner of a building on Commercial Row and hauled water from the river and bought a copper boiler and was in business. He did not name the laundry. The men who needed it knew where it was. Years later, when his son James was old enough to ask questions, Wei would try to explain what it had been like to drive the last spike. You drove it? James would say. I was nearby, Wei would say. near enough to hear it, he would not say the rest of it, which was this, that they were all nearby, 10,000 men near enough to hear the hammer and far enough away to miss the party, building something they would not be thanked for, in a country that did not yet have the vocabulary for what they had done. The spike was gold. The telegram said it in a single word. The river ran south toward the desert and did not care about any of it. He washed clothes. He sent money home. He stayed. Historical note, Chinese workers made up the majority of the Central Pacific Railroad's labor force building east from Sacramento. Estimates run from 10,000 to 15,000 men, roughly 80% of the workforce by 1867. They were paid less than their white counterparts and excluded from the Golden Spike Ceremony at Promontory, Utah on May 10, 1869. Many settled in Nevada towns after the railroad's completion. Discrimination against Chinese residents was formalized by the Federal Chinese Exclusion Act of 1882,